Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 1 o'clock hour. We'll hear from the Chiefs coordinators. Spagnuolo, Bieniemy, and Taube, along with Tyrann Mathieu, will be at the podium getting ready for the Steelers. Sunday Night Football, 12.5-point favorites are the Chiefs. Also a little sports or leisure as well. But other Chiefs topics we're going to get into later on this hour. Right now, talking to college basketball with our college basketball insider from ESPN, Myron Medcalf, presented by Harvesters Community Food Network, harvesters.org. Go to the website to make monetary donations if that's something that you are able to do. You can also get information on how you can donate food or host a food drive virtually or in person. Harvester provides food and household products to more than 760 nonprofit agencies, including emergency food pantries, community kitchens, homeless shelters, children's homes, and others. Also offering education programs to increase community awareness of hunger and teach about good nutrition. That is harvesters.org. Go there if you want to learn more. And Myron Medcalf helping out harvesters.org as we talk to him each and every Thursday here noon, talking some college basketball. Myron, welcome into the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Hey, would the Chiefs beat the Steelers even if you play quarterback? Because it seems that way. Like, it seems like there's no way for the Steelers to win this game.
That has been the main topic we have had here, Myron, is just the confidence over confidence. I've asked if it's maybe arrogance that I just don't feel like there's a chance that the Steelers are going to win the game. The only question is, do the Chiefs cover? And we've even joked, like, you know, Tyreek Hill had a heel problem. Travis Kelce was dealing with a little bit of a hip issue in the game against the Broncos. Do you rest those guys? We even had some people weigh in and say, I don't know, I feel like they could beat him with Chad Henne in the game and not Patrick Mahomes. So that has been the feeling around here, Myron, with also some that have the, oh, man, it's the playoffs, and I just don't want to take anybody for granted.
Yeah, I think that's always fair. Like, what was it? Was it 3 years ago when the Ravens lost to the Titans in that first game?
2019.
You know, but I also think having vets on that team, they won't let those guys get into that mindset. I just think the Steelers are just not. They got so lucky to get in. Like, I don't think they belong here. And I think that's probably part of the challenge with taking them seriously as a playoff team.
Right? Yeah. Like, I think fans can, you know, overlook them all they want. I don't think the Chiefs are going to do that.
No, they won't.
Yeah, so that's where my confidence comes in, is, like, if the Chiefs were sleepwalking through the Broncos game last week, and why should they have been? Because the one seed was still, you know, available to them, at least a chance if they win, and then the, you know, Titans were to lose to the Texans, which was close. But if they were sleepwalking through that game, that ain't happening in the postseason. You know, the Chiefs have scored 30 points every single game Mahomes has been the quarterback in the postseason, except for the Cleveland game in which he got injured, and they had 22 points on the board when he went out in the third quarter, and the Bucks game in which they scored 9, and that was just a disaster of a game with offensive line issues and a lot of things that happened that week. So I just don't see the Steelers getting to 30 points. And if that's the case, the Chiefs are going to be at 30, where are the Steelers going to be at? If the Steelers get to 30, the Chiefs won't still be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. It'll be the end. Yeah, they'll be down by 3 scores. And I honestly don't think, like, the Denver game. To me, you can't underestimate the idea of that whole team knowing Vic Fangio's about to get fired the next day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just really trying to do everything they can to kind of put on one last big performance. So I think that was a bigger factor than Kansas City not really taking them seriously.
Yep. Visiting with Myron Medcalf from ESPN, talking football, but our college basketball insider. Let's talk some hoops here before I get your Super Bowl prediction at the end of the segment here. I want to start in general just of bigger picture with you as we're getting to the halfway point of January, and you start to look at teams that are going to be ramping up and really figuring out what the rotation is going to be if they haven't already. Are there any bigger surprises, good or bad, that you look around and go, you know, I didn't expect this to be the case on a positive level. I didn't expect this to be the case maybe in an underwhelming aspect of the season to this point?
Well, I think Purdue, you know, I mean, to go with Trevion Williams, who was coming off the bench, and then, you know, flip-flop that with Zach Edey. I think the fact that just continues to kind of work for them. Although they lost to Wisconsin, but Wisconsin has been good. You know, they've surprised a lot of people. So I think the biggest surprise has been, I don't think anyone had Johnny Davis. I don't think anyone knew who Johnny Davis was. And now here's Wisconsin looking like a team that can win the Big Ten. I think that's the theme overall. You know, Baylor losing to Tech at home. I think it's just one of those years. I don't think there's a team in college basketball as good as 2015 Kentucky for sure. But I also don't think there's a team in college basketball as good as 2020 Kansas. Like, I think that team runs through everybody playing right now. And I thought that was a really good team. I don't know if there's even a team that could handle them. And that, to me, just means that there are a lot of good teams trying to figure it out. But it's just hard to know. You know, Oscar Tshiebwe at Kentucky just is a monster in what he's been able to do and been one of the more dominant players in all of college basketball. But is he surrounded with enough guys who can make that matter? I mean, Kentucky has been a great three-point shooting team. But I think that's a squad to watch for if you go, okay, if they hit a little rhythm offensively, they could be really, really dangerous. So I just think there's a bunch of teams that, you know, put it this way, I think we're probably at 20 teams that can make the Final Four. Like, that to me is how wide open it feels right now.
That's interesting. How many in a general year would you say mid-January that you feel like teams that could, or you look at it and go, yeah, a miracle run can happen. Like, there's a VCU, a George Mason, things like that. But, you know, legitimately here, the number of teams maybe mid-January that you think can be a Final Four team?
10. You know, maybe in a really, really wild year, 12. But it's usually about 10. Because you usually have the three, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we have that now. I mean, you know, maybe that is, you know, Baylor maybe, Gonzaga, Kansas, Purdue. I think Auburn's really good. So even right there, those are five teams where you're like, okay, you wouldn't be shocked if those teams are in it. But then it's like, okay, Kentucky is coming on strong. We don't really talk about Arizona at all.
Yeah, true.
But they've been very, very good all season long. You know, Duke, anytime you got a guy like Paolo Banchero, I mean, you're going to be dangerous. UCLA's been paused, so they kind of fell off the radar, but that's still a one-loss UCLA team. That only loss is to Gonzaga and Vegas back in Thanksgiving. Illinois figuring it out. Tech just goes to Waco, and they beat Baylor. USC suffers its first loss of the year in a very weird game at Stanford, where Stanford comes off a three-week pause, and there's nobody in the building. So, I mean, you know, when you think of it that way, it does feel like the pool is much wider than maybe it's been at this point in past years.
You know, you mentioned Wisconsin and a team that maybe can win the Big Ten, and them winning that game over Purdue, knocking off Iowa. What's going on with Michigan? An Elite Eight team a year ago that just looks, I mean, they're 7-6. They can't beat UCF. They can't beat Rutgers. They lost to Minnesota. I mean, what the heck is going on in Ann Arbor with Juwan Howard's squad?
Let's be clear, UCF kicked their butts. I mean, that was a 14-point game. They lose to Rutgers. I always assume, man, and you can never see this, like, we're not going to know the real story about Michigan. I mean, I don't have to be that careful, man. I'm doing their game for TV next week, right? But I think this is one of those stories that we're not going to know exactly what's going on until after the season. There's been some rumblings that there's some internal stuff happening with that team, sort of maybe a tug-of-war on the coaching staff. You've heard those rumblings. But I just don't know. I mean, this is one of the bigger collapses we've ever seen. You know, the talent is there. We know what these guys can do. We watch them. But last year, you know, you go and you're a team that is, what, making like 38-39% of their threes, and you come down to earth a little bit, and now they're sort of an average three-point shooting team. That changes a lot, you know. That changes a lot. But I never thought it would be this bad, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's time to turn it around, but you better do that fast, or this thing is going to get really, really, really ugly.
I mean, they're a bucket away from going to the Final Four.
Amazing.
You know, losing to UCLA, and this year they're, you know, a lot of buckets away from beating Rutgers.
Yes, which does not add up. I mean, they're in Minnesota. You know, at home.
Yeah, right. That's,
by double digits.
I mean, like, it's one thing to lose to Arizona neutral site, you know, North Carolina neutral site, even though they got beat down in both of those games. So it's also the margin of victory in those. But, losing to, you know, Minnesota, UCF, Rutgers, and the only win mixed in there of those three games is Southern Utah with a win. You're right. That's not a talent thing. That's a what is going on behind the scenes as to why this team can't figure it out, can't get it together, can't play like a collective unit. And is there something just pulling at the strings as this thing starts to unravel or already is unraveling? And can Juwan Howard and the team turn it around in time to salvage this season? Or is this going to be one of those you look back and go, what in the heck happened to that talented team? And you're right. Maybe in 10 years we get the real story.
Yeah, it's bizarre, man. I thought they'd be sailing this year.
Yep. Visiting with Myron Metcalf from ESPN, presented by Harvesters Community Food Bank, harvesters.org. I thought at the beginning of the season the SEC was going to be the best basketball conference, you know, top to bottom, just depth-wise, and also some good teams at the top. I definitely think that's the Big 12 now, that they've got Baylor there. Tech even goes and beats Baylor, and I think that's a team that was, you know, looked over before the season. Kansas is still figuring it out while also winning games. Texas, you know what Chris Beard's, you know, history is there. So, and even Iowa State, I mean, they beat Tech at home. They've got a chance to beat Kansas on the road. They've looked like certainly a representative team in the Big 12. Is the Big 12 the best conference to you? And did you think the SEC was going to be that preseason? And maybe why has that change taken place?
No, I thought it would be the SEC. I mean, I think they're good. There's still a lot of good teams at the top of that league, but top to bottom, nobody's matching the Big 12. I mean, I don't think Kansas State's a bad team. I mean, what was it, like three-point loss to, what, TCU and West Virginia?
Yeah.
They're a bucket away on the road against Oklahoma.
They led Texas at half.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a team that's had some issues, obviously, internally with COVID and all the things they dealt with, but I don't think K-State's a bad team. I just think they're the worst team in a really good league, you know, a really good conference. So I think top to bottom, you know, they are what they usually are, and just being a really, really dominant, you know, league, pound for pound, the best in America. Iowa State, like, Iowa State's right there with Kansas. I mean, the gold 10 is what made the headlines, but they are going blow for blow down the stretch with a really, really good Kansas team that won a national championship. To your point, Baylor losing to Texas Tech, that was just Texas Tech making plays and matching Baylor in their building. You know, that was just so, so impressive. I don't think Texas has figured it out yet. You know, I think that's a team that is still kind of learning Chris Beard, and they're going to get better as well. So I just think that's a really impressive league. I mean, Oklahoma State's still fighting. And that's a team that literally has nothing to play for, and they're still battling.
And that's the issue with even, you know, Oklahoma State being 1-2 in conference right now. And, you know, if you go by Ken Pom or just different rankings or even record overall, that Oklahoma State's 8-6, they have that record, but they're talented. Like, in any given night, they can show up and put it together, and they're talented enough to beat you, whoever you is, you know, in the Big 12, because they've got the guys. It's just, you know, Boykin's task this year is difficult to get those guys to play, giving everything they can every second you're out there in conference when, you know, there's no postseason that's ahead of you. That's difficult to do, but on any given night, they can beat you because they've got the talent to do that. So is it, you know, we've talked about, you know, over the years, like Gonzaga doesn't have a lot of challenge in their conference, and does that hurt them come postseason time? Or we've heard that, you know, this team went through the gauntlet of their conference and that's why they lose in the postseason. Is it good, bad, indifferent to have a tougher league like the Big 12 is, say for a Baylor or a Kansas or a Tech or whoever that, you know, seeded wise that can make a run?
I mean, it depends on the coach you talk to, right?
Yes, like, that's a good point.
You know, here's the thing about the gauntlet, right? It's an easy built-in excuse. If you don't meet expectations in the postseason, you can always say you were just exhausted by the gauntlet, right? If you succeed and win big, well, the gauntlet prepared you for that.
That's
but
right.
I do think in general, man, I think I always wonder about health with that, right? Like playing that kind of schedule, playing so many tough teams, you know, that is an exhausting stretch. Are guys healthy or not? Like that to me is the biggest thing when it comes to the postseason. And I do think there's value in seeing a bunch of good teams and kind of preparing you for that versus Gonzaga maybe going a month, 2 months in some years and you know, not playing an elite team. At the same time, I think Gonzaga for the last 6-7 years has been right there with everybody else.
Yeah.
So do you have the talent or not? Ultimately, mm-hmm. that's going to be the number one thing. And I think the NCAA tournament is such a crapshoot that it's far more personnel-based than anything. Like, I look at a team like Auburn. I've been watching a lot of Auburn tape, man. And, like, they are really, really weird, man. Like, they just got Jabari Smith all over the court. Like, who's really built to defend that? Like, you could play a really good team, like even a Baylor, and they may not just have an answer for a team that's set up like that. At the same time, they get a team that's more versatile, maybe like a Kansas, and maybe they're not built for that. So I don't think the schedule matters as much in preparing teams as what happens before the season and who you're recruiting and signing, because it's always going to come down to personnel at the end of the day.
You know, it's interesting when you know, you talk about Auburn. Obviously, we cover Kansas here. And a switch in, you know, just on the defensive end of the court, that this is, according to Ken Pom's adjusted defensive ratings, the second worst defensive team for Bill Self in his time at Kansas. And the worst was the 2018 team that, you know, all they did was go to the Final Four. So it's not a death knell, obviously, for Bill Self, where this is Bruce Pearl's best defensive team, you know, that he has this year. And it's just not something that typically his teams are going to be built on defense and getting stops. Bill Self's teams are typically built on that. Yet offensively for Bruce Pearl's a little bit down. Offensively for Bill Self, right around where it typically is, top 10, you know, because he's that good of a coach. What is it about Auburn? You've been watching a lot of tape. Is it Jabari Smith that just makes that big of a difference? The guy that can go anywhere on the court at 6'10", 220 can be that big of a difference maker as to why all of a sudden, you know, they're a team under Bruce Pearl that can go ranked in the 50s and the 80s and the 100s in defensive efficiency to now they're number 7 in the country?
Yeah, I think he's a big part of it, man. I mean, they're just able to catch you in so many different mismatch problems, you know? And I think their guards are really strong. I mean, Katie Johnson, Wendell Green, like, they really know how to push the pace. And they got, like, guys who are sort of weird. Jalen Williams, you know, 6'8". You know, Walker Kessler is a big body. Like, they just kind of have it all. They're kind of made up more like an NBA team, you know? But I do think Jabari, especially as he continues to grow, just puts teams at a lot of challenges because there's nobody really built like that in college basketball, you know, who can kind of match up with a player like that. And you know, they're playing, like you said, great defense. Not a great shooting team yet, and that may never change, but the way that they're clamping down, they're going to always be involved, you know. But I also think Kansas isn't like a terrible team. It's top 40 adjusted defensive efficiency.
Yeah.
They're making a ton of their threes. So I think long-term – you'd probably rather be Kansas than Auburn, just the way that the tournament can go.
Would you rather be Kansas than Auburn with a true star NBA legit Jabari Smith on the floor as opposed to Kansas that has really good players? And Ochai is obviously a phenomenal player and, you know, could be a Wooden or Naismith Award winner this year. But doesn't necessarily hold that natural, you know, he's not 6'10", 220, shooting almost 50% from three on almost 100 attempts, you know what I mean? So there's a part of me that feels like, man, if I could just have that superstar player, even over a number of guys, if I can surround even that superstar player with some good guys, I might take my chances with that, even though I think Kansas has a team that is put together well, like the pieces fit together at Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure Bill Self would love to have a guy like that. But, I mean, you know, NCAA tournament history is something we always got to follow, too, right? Especially recent history. Like, who's had that in recent years? Baylor had it last year. Those were good guys they had. But there wasn't, like, a freak like that on the roster. I mean, 2020 Kansas I thought was the best team without the tournament. You know, I mean, 19 is Virginia. They had good players.
Yeah.
No one like that. 18 Villanova. I mean, Mikal Bridges was really good, but he wasn't that sort of like specimen. Carolina, Villanova again, Wisconsin, like all had really good players, elite players, but I don't think they had a dude who just sort of fit that profile. Like I just think Jabari Smith is unique, period. And I think what you have in Auburn is like if they get the right draw, first off, there aren't going to be any like teams in opening rounds who've ever seen a beat like that. But then I think when you get to the Sweet 16, if they can make it there, then it's like, okay, who are they matched up against? And who can kind of slow him down? Because he's getting better and better, and he's just more of a matchup challenge for every team they're playing.
It would have been interesting to see Dayton and Obi Toppin,
they would have done
there with the surrounding with some good players, but really that one guy that can dominate a game. Visiting with Meyer Metcalf from ESPN College Basketball Insider, presented by Harvesters Community Food Network, harvesters.org. Another quick one, and then we'll get you out of here with your Super Bowl prediction. Missouri has an embarrassing effort last night. They score 43. They lose by 44. They beat Alabama over the weekend, which probably tells me more about Alabama and that loss that's going to be an anchor for them when it comes selection committee time and seeding and things like that. I've said here on the show, Myron, that I don't really feel like breaking down and talking a lot of Missouri outside of when is it the end of the Conzo Martin era? Because that's really the only conversation that's there, because they're not making the tournament. It doesn't feel like there's much hope or an end in sight, or, you know, if these guys mature and get better and more seasoning when they could all be gone at the end of the year anyway. How bad is it in Columbia, do you think? And, you know, do you think the Conzo Martin era is close to an end, even though they'll owe them, you know, $6 million?
Well, I always go back to when I was on campus with Conzo, you know, who I know pretty well, and Michael Porter Jr. And that year where it was like, you know, they bring in his dad, they bring in the Porter kids. And I thought that was either going to be great or not great. Like, you're either going to build something off that or you were going to maybe be challenged to duplicate that. And I think it's been the latter. Like, Michael Porter was hurt. You know, that was sort of a mess. And he was sort of he wasn't necessarily always listening to coach and all that, but I think starting that way and not getting what you expected to get out of that created some challenges, you know, going forward. But I think if you're making like 25% of your threes the way they are now, and they have like a 21% turnover percentage, you're not going to win any games. And then it's sort of like, I'm sure Conzo knows that if this continues, that it's not going to be good. But I mean, they're legitimately a team that's just doing a lot of things wrong. But then you beat Alabama and you think there's some hope. And then you do what you did last night, and everyone kind of comes back down to earth. So it's been a tough year, certainly.
I just don't know how in today's day and age you can have a team that shoots as poorly as this Missouri team. Even Cal had trouble over the years finding a consistent shooter, and shocking, his only national championship, he had Deron Lamb, who was the second leading scorer the entire tournament, not of Kentucky. He scored the second most points in that tournament behind Thomas Robinson and KU. And people don't talk about him on that championship team. It's Anthony Davis and MKG and Terrence Jones and guys like that. But Deron Lamb hardly ever missed. And Devin Booker probably didn't play enough in 2015, you know, although he couldn't defend me sometimes. Out there on the floor, so he couldn't play in that Wisconsin game because they just Bo Ryan just tore him apart with Sam Decker. That's a conversation for a different time. But, you know, even Cal has gone out and found shooters and said, I can't win without having guys that can knock down a shot. Like, there's no reason for a team to be built in today's day and age and not have a couple of guys that are just dead-eye shooters, that Missouri can't go to a smaller school in the day and age of transfer and say, you know what, this guy's shooting, you know, 48% from three. I'll bring him in. You know, he may not be the best athlete on the floor, but I'm going to put him out there, and he's going to at least stretch the floor and allow some of my other athletes to do that, and I got to figure it out defensively. You just, I mean, 24% is just, you know, it's the worst Power 5 team, or Power 6, if you want to throw in the Big East, team in the country in three-point shooting. And it's not exactly like, you know, last year was any better. They ranked 230th, and year before that, they ranked 326th. But with Michael Porter and Cassius Robinson and those guys, they were, you know, 26th in the country. And guess what? They were a pretty good team.
Yeah, having those shooters helps. I mean, obviously, you need that in the modern game. I think we've exaggerated, like, what shooters are because of Steph Curry. We think everyone has a guy who can make 45% of the three.
Right.
Gym shooters are different than game shooters, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody can make those shots in the gym. Do you have guys who can create shots? And I think that's what they're struggling with as well.
That's a good point.
You don't have guys who can create those shots and those opportunities. you're going to be in trouble.
Yep. Visiting with Myron Metcalf from ESPN, presented by Harvesters Community Food Bank, harvesters.org. All right, Super Bowl pick, getting everybody to weigh in before the playoffs start. Who do you have winning? Who do you have losing in the Super Bowl?
I got Kansas City, Green Bay. I got Green Bay winning. Sorry, guys, Kansas City.
Well, I mean,
but I'm usually wrong, though. So, I mean, that's the good news.
Well, as long as you're not wrong about the participants, I think people would take that. maybe be wrong about the prediction of the game, but as long as it's Chiefs being there along with Green Bay, you know, I think certainly we'd take that, the repeat of Super Bowl I, and hopefully a different result than Super Bowl I. We shall see. Myron Metcalf from ESPN, presented by Harvesters Community Food Bank, harvesters.org. Myron, you're the man, as always. Appreciate it. Enjoy the football and the basketball. We will talk next week, man.
Sounds good, man.
All right, there's Myron Metcalf. Great stuff from him, college basketball insider, but also, you know, just in general covering sports. I mean, he hosts a show on ESPN Radio, and a college basketball show, so he covers plenty of the NFL as well. And a great dude. When he comes on the show, proceeds go to Harvesters Community Food Network, harvesters.org, if you want to donate and help out as well, and even show your appreciation if you want to do that with Myron Metcalf coming on. And not taking a dime, sending it all to Harvesters. Harvesters.org. Go to the website to make a monetary donation, or if you want to get information on how you can donate food, or you can host a food drive that's virtually or in person, you can do either one of those. That is Harvesters.org. We take a timeout. We come back. We continue rolling. More Zone after this. We'll talk about the Chiefs' offense and if they do need those explosive plays that may be missing this year from one number 10 on the Chiefs.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
In the great green room, there was a telephone and a red balloon and a picture of the cow jumping over the moon. And good night to the old lady whispering hush. Good night, stars. Good night, air. Good night, noise everywhere.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, so I know we were going to talk Chiefs here, but following a story on Twitter is sometimes fun or not. So the story that is out there is that Konzo Martin has been fired by the Missouri Tigers. The issue you run into is the first news of that, the first tweet of Konzo being fired, is put out by a parody account.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the other verified accounts that have said Konzo was fired is just parroting what the parody account put out there in having fun with Konzo being fired, because there are three or four verified accounts that have said that Konzo Martin has been fired by Mizzou and Coach Mann will take over.
That is not true.
That is not anything we're seeing. We've reached out to a couple of people that have said, absolutely not. That is not happening. And it was a parody account that other people are picking up on.
And if the issue is, it didn't come from Adam Scheffler or whatever, right?
Right.
This is a full, like, created persona that I'm not going to tell people what exactly, but it has a significant tell. In the profile.
Right. You don't need to.
It is not a legitimate reporter. So mm-hmm. That's nothing. Don't do that. Now, again, but all it takes is for you to get one person with a check mark
right.
to retweet it. And then all of a sudden, everybody else says, ooh, this person said this happened. That is a
parody.
And
there are a couple of check marks. There's someone in Arkansas that is an actual reporter, works for a news station there, and went to Mizzou. And he put out, 10 minutes ago, Missouri head coach Konzo Martin has been fired after a 40-plus point loss to Arkansas last night. Now, he did not say reporting
right.
or sources say. He is just saying that Konzo Martin has been fired. He has a blue check mark. He is an actual person.
Right.
He is not a parody account of this person. He went to Mizzou. He now works in Arkansas. But that was put out 10 minutes ago, where the original parody account tweet was put out an hour ago.
No free clout isn't just to keep people from stealing clout they didn't earn. It's also a safety mechanism. Because if you tweet, you know, this thing has happened, first reported by @whoever.
Yeah, right,
you're giving up the credit But you're also giving up the blame if you're wrong. And in this case, it was wrong from every report that we have and everyone that you've reached out to.
Yes.
This would be a great time, though, for Mizzou to just sneak that in, that they actually have fired him.
No. Sunday. Saturday or Sunday.
Sunday
is when you do that.
At like 7:19 p.m. or something.
Well, it won't get play here, right. But St. Louis, it could still get play.
That's true.
But you got to do it over the weekend. Saturday is the best because, and it's not going to happen because, you know, from what we've seen, it is a parody of parody accounts, and I wouldn't suggest going and checking that out, that reported that.
Don't check at work.
Yeah, that's a good way of linking to it. You know, saying, you know what?
Depending on your work, you probably won't be able to check at work.
You may not.
Might be a firewall there.
There are going to be some issues.
Yeah, you're going to be taken aback pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If you click on the link from that bio.
Yeah.
But
a lot of people put, you know, whoever they work for, like a collection of their work. And this guy did in a way. I just would say don't click it.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're not prepared to see some things that you don't want to see today.
Don't click it or I'm stopping. So if they were going to do it, today wouldn't be the day because then you're getting the full cycle today. You're getting the cycle tomorrow. If they were going to hide it, it would be Saturday, like afternoon,
right,
in the middle of the playoff games, then all day Sunday playoff games happen and nobody cares on Monday. Cause even at that point, like most people had already talked about it, if they cared about it Saturday and Sunday, but then you get into Monday, but still it's not going to happen. I can't see Reed Francois firing Konzo mid season. If it were to happen, it would be coming off last night's embarrassing performance that they no-showed. But her relationship with the Martin family would lead me to believe she wouldn't do it mid-season. Plus, I mean, I shouldn't say plus what's there to gain. There's something to gain by getting a start on looking around at other coaches that might be out there. But you would have had to already been working on a buyout. Because I don't think you're going to fire Konzo and just pay the immediate $6 million that you would owe him before May 1st. I think it's $6 million, and the next year May 1st goes down to $3 million. Like, it's not a matter of spending six. It's a matter of spending $3 million than you were going to spend. Because next year, if you fire him, then you would owe him $3 million anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's just $3 million more than you would have paid him. It might be one of those to where if Konzo wants another job and you want to find a coach at the Final Four, mm-hmm, where it is typically the timing of the coaches that are out there to give yourself the best chance, you'd want to move on at the end of the season, so you might then reach some sort of a settlement of, hey, Konzo, we let you go. You can go to get another job right now. We find another coach. We can work this thing out. I know we'd owe you $6 million on May 1st. Let's $4.5 million, $5 million mm-hmm, right now, and then you can go and get another job, and then you're not set there floating in the wind in May as well. But we're only talking about it because a parody account was put out there, and then people jumped on it and started retweeting it, and then other check marks retweeted it, which then meant that people were just going to parrot that and maybe not do any of the research, and so reaching out to those that we know have said no, mm-hmm, it is not happening.
It is kind of interesting. I think you mentioned most of the main things, but like, when do you think of an in-season firing making sense? It is your John Gruden personal thing, lost the locker room and support of everyone, right? And then maybe it's an in-season firing, or, you know, Urban Meyer, I guess. We got a couple NFL ones recently, but especially in college basketball, in January, no less, I think that would be a move you would make if you thought that the coach was not getting everything that he could be getting out of that roster. I don't know if that's... Is that the vibe right now for Mizzou? Mizzou feels like there are not many ingredients in the pantry, and the chef hasn't made anything very good with them. And also, obviously, he's responsible for the ingredients in the pantry much more than a professional football coach would be.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I see a reason to fire him in season, at least until you get to the point where that buyout is known and understood in a way that could potentially benefit everybody. Gets him a chance to get another job sooner, saves Mizzou a little money.
What it would do is, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if we're saying what are the benefits of it, to me the benefit would be that you're showing Mizzou fans that you're serious about this, you're new on the job,
right,
and you may have this relationship, but you're not just going to allow your basketball program to look like this. Regardless of if you're close to the family or friends with the family, it's business. That's not going to stand.
Right.
It can also give you a head start on some coaches that might be available. College football has done this a lot.
Sure.
They fired coaches to say, you know, we're going to let this guy go before he starts. You know, like K-State had a run of what, 3 straight weeks where the coach that they had, the team they had just beaten, then fires their coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Texas Tech, all of a sudden they're firing that coach. Why? Because they wanted to get a head start, and they didn't want that coach then winning a number of games and going, well, now we can't fire him. They didn't think he was the guy. They moved on. USC moving on from Clay Helton probably had something to do with Lincoln Riley then taking USC, because right. there was probably some conversation that was going on behind the scenes. Although Lincoln Riley said the first time he talked to USC was like that Saturday.
Yeah,
you know,
it's crazy.
After, like, crazy. And then, you know, even after that Saturday, you know, he talked with his wife on Sunday night, and then Sunday they made the decision, and it came out. Like, that's a big decision, but they just decided that day, you know, hey, let's just move our whole family to Southern California and switch jobs. Yeah, no, that's not the case.
Brian Kelly picked up an accent in like 48 hours. I mean,
that's a good point. You can do a lot in 48 hours.
You can do a lot in 48 hours as long as you have your family on your side.
My
there.
Family.
My family.
My family.
Someone else said this, but he turned into Foghorn Leghorn.
Right. He had the wrong accent. He picked up, he was trying to pick up a Louisiana accent, and he picked up an Alabama accent.
Yeah.
You know, a Georgia
yeah.
accent.
He's already like, angling for the Bama
son,
job. Son,
I would say to you, son, that you are in the wrong place with the wrong accent. If you are trying to pick up an accent and at least feel like you are now ingratiating yourself with the local folk, you're doing it in the wrong community, son. That's what I'm telling you. Bless your heart, you should be doing that in Georgia.
If he does a press conference at any point this year and he has a mental sort of buffering phrase, goes, I say, I will, I don't know what I'll do. Something dramatic.
I say we're going to win some games this year. He did address it, though.
Yeah,
Brian Kelly did
that,
and
yeah.
was like, well, you know, you can accent and things like that. Like, he addressed it and had some fun and poking some fun at himself. And you know what? At that point, you do just have to own it.
Yeah.
Like, you knew what people were saying. It was all over the place. You couldn't get away from it. Even Tyrann Mathieu was asked about it here in Kansas City that said, just be yourself. Right? Just be yourself. Don't try to, you know, go down there and then say, you know, I'm one of you. Like, I was waiting for him to go, I am so happy to be here. And let me tell you something about this Tiger football team and what we're going to get accomplished this year. I know the previous coach was not able to get some of those things that you guys were wanting. He won a national championship, but did not do nearly enough after that national championship. I'm here to show you, tell you, that we're going to sustain this right here. We're going to sustain this. We're going to punk these SOBs out right out the door. They're going to do that.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
It's like, damn, Brian Kelly. That is odd.
He crushes a can of Red Bull against his forehead and then moves on. That's crazy. I thought they just fired that guy. Nope.
Odd.
It's me now. The voice.
So weird.
The voice stays. It's like with it's an office. It is the Pope or a president or whatever. It doesn't matter. That gets passed down. If you're the head coach of Louisiana State football,
that's right.
You
got to
say, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
You've got to get your consonants confused.
Go Tigers.
Ladies and gentlemen, new football coach, Brian Kelly.
Well, I just want to say when we down here in Louisiana, when we came from the big state like Indiana, when we are so close to Indianapolis and playing football games like that, just being around here, you find special of folks that you know, talking to some of the football players around here as well. My family and everybody around here, really getting back into my Louisiana roots.
You got to have some jowls in
there
also.
Family. Oh, yes, well.
Gotta feel the face move a little bit.
Solitary. Oh.
Yeah, so he owned it.
If you're just tuning in, Kwanzaa Martin has not been fired.
Of course, no.
That was a bunch of bull hockey. Well, let me tell you something. If I won a national championship at the University of Louisiana, State University, and I get fired a couple years later because I wasn't doing enough, I'll be damned if Kazo can't get fired either. It had not happened, but I'm not saying it shouldn't happen either.
You see that silver planet, shaped like a football? That's a planet I want to live on. My football planet? That's where I live. Football planet with my family.
I'll tell you this much, though. Maybe Kazo Martin should probably teach his team how to play some football, because they ain't playing much basketball right now.
We are both, you need a no-but person. We're both yes-and people. You know, the golden rule of improv, don't just say yes and build on it. The issue is that I think we could, if you and I continued, if we had no commercial breaks, I think that we could build an entire fiction where Brian Kelly is the coach of the football-shaped planet football team. I think we could have it as a mini-series.
With an Ed Orgeron fake accent?
Yes, we could sell this to Apple TV. They made Ted Lasso into a wonderful thing. They could take this bit into an Apple TV show.
He's like a robot that's just having a malfunction to where he goes from Ed Orgeron to Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what now. You come around here and my family is so excited to be around here at Louisiana State University. When we're around here playing football and kicking everybody's ass, we are gonna go out there and play some fine football for y'all fine folks around here.
Matt Jarrett just texted me and said we should have said not to click the link in that guy's bio. We have said.
A lot. We prefaced it, ended it with, caveated it.
I know most of you
underlined
people.
Underlined it, italic and bolded it.
Most of you are going to be like, Matt, I get it. You tell me not to click something, first thing I'm going to do is click that thing.
Don't
I've
look down.
A lot
I said don't look down. Yeah, I wasn't going down. To, but you told me not to. Now I'm curious.
Don't.
Just don't do it at work.
Just don't do it. Just don't click
that. You don't really need to click that.
No. Like you're saying, there are people that are just going to do it. Just don't do it at work.
Just wait till you get home. And then maybe by the time you get home, you'll have forgotten about it and you'll save yourself the trouble.
Don't do it.
People are way too curious to not click the link.
Right.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. Just don't do it at work.
This guy's getting a lot of hits on that link.
Yeah.
A lot of people clicking that link and going, I should have listened to them.
You know what?
Had I taken heed, like I was at Allen Fieldhouse, and took that advice, I would not be feeling the way I am right now.
If we can give a little bit of a hint, maybe people will understand what it is and they can move on from it.
We don't have to hint anything.
I'm going to say, Bart Scott, give that advice?
There's no hinting about that, right? I mean, with Josh Allen or anything like that?
No. Bart Scott wouldn't necessarily
have
that conversation.
Nope.
Because that's sort of the...
Yeah, you know, it's not a big deal. I didn't look at what the angles were. I clicked right off of it after I clicked on it. I didn't have a chance to study it there, Josh. All right, well, we take a time out.
I had a teleprompter out and everything.
That's right.
We're going to take a time out. The fact that Gonzo's still coaching there at Missouri. And,
this segment start? That's all?
Let me tell you something about this. If there ain't a better AD out there than Desiree Reed-Francois, that's what I'm talking about. The name alone tells me she know what the hell she's doing, Rondell. And if she want to fire Gonzo Martin, she going to fire Gonzo Martin. Money be damned. If she don't want to fire Gonzo Martin, then you get the hell out of her way. That's Reed Francois. And we'll be back. We'll know.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I'm here with my family.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The beautiful part of sports radio, or whatever the hell that was in the previous segment. Text coming in with crying laughing emojis. Text coming in saying, I'm crying. Text coming in saying, if you mix in Denny Matthews, it will be the greatest segment ever.
Wow.
Another text coming in and saying, this is awful. Please stop. Thank God it's a commercial. So, yeah, there you go. Perfect sports radio right there. That's great. It's awesome. Worst thing ever. Dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. I kind of agree with both.
Yeah.
We went to break. We're like, that was fun, but awful.
Really dumb. But great. But and stupid.
I regret nothing.
Nothing.
All right, 913-3810-810, abbreviated sports or leisure, because we'll hear from the Chiefs around 125. Sports or leisure, next.